There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on the St. Patrick's Day edition of the show, even though there's no parading going on and no raising of the pints in the local establishments. We'll still recognize St. Patrick's Day. A lot to do on today's show. My buddy Cameron Smith is going to join us here shortly. Lots of news out of Montgomery and Washington to talk about. But news all over the state of Alabama is about the weather or the forecast and the chance of severe weather. We bring in, of course, our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, to talk more about it. Dr. Bill, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
You can feel it. Yeah, humid outside, southwest wind blowing. Look at that cold air back to our west. So,
right. So
there's ingredients you've taught me over time for severe weather. Kind of walk us through what is possible and kind of timelines on that.
Yeah, it was a major storm system now moving into Arkansas, and we've got a cold front that stretches all the way down through East Texas, and that front is headed in our direction. At the same time, we've got another weather front in Alabama. It's up in the northern part of the state, and that's a warm front. And here we are in between the two. And we've had some very gusty winds so far. In the last hour or so, we've had gusts of 41 miles an hour out at the airport. And it's going to remain very windy through the afternoon, especially as that front gets closer and closer. What we're looking at through the afternoon hours right now, Sean, is a lot of scattered thunderstorm activity that is increasing over central and Mississippi and central Alabama, and it's extending down into the interior of southwest Alabama. Nothing right along the coast. And those individual thunderstorms, many of those will be rotating thunderstorms as they head north and northeast across Alabama. And they'll intensify through the afternoon, so we'll likely see some tornado activity, particularly in central Alabama, over the next several hours. Here along the coast, it's very possible we may not see any of those, but there's still a chance that we could see a thunderstorm or two reaching severe levels. It might get down and or build in our area, and then those thunderstorms are tracking northeastward away from the coast. Over the next several hours, that cold front now that I was talking about in Texas, it's going to move into Mississippi, and we expect a line of heavy thunderstorms to form along that front, and will move into our area late this evening. It could arrive, say, 11 o'clock or maybe a little bit later than that, possibly after midnight. But that line of thunderstorms will most likely be severe, and there's the possibility of tornado activity along that line. And we'll see that come into our area. So through the evening hours tonight, may see a few showers and possibly a thunderstorm or two, although most of those will be north of us. And then the front will come through late this evening, and we'll see some heavy thunderstorm activity as it moves through.
All right, so the storms we're seeing right now are through this afternoon, the advance guard, if you will, of this system. Those are kind of hit and miss more to our north. But you say 11 o'clock or so tonight when the real front comes through that line, we are going to get those thunderstorms.
Yeah, we'll get those, okay. And that's from 11 o'clock perhaps to as late as 1 o'clock in the morning. That's when that line will come through, and it will take probably an hour or so for all of that activity to sweep through our area. And we'll get some strong straight-line winds out of those thunderstorms. it's possible that there may be some that could rotate and produce some tornadoes. More likely that will occur again to the north of us. But we're still in a risk area for severe weather and possibility of tornadoes. And so it's going to be windy the rest of the afternoon and on through the evening. And then, of course, that line will come through a thunderstorm. So either before midnight or slightly after midnight.
You know, Dr. Bill, watching kind of the setup for this and your warnings earlier in this week and what Governor Ivey did yesterday, and I'm getting notice from school, no after-school activities even here in Mobile County, which it's a whole other discussion. But what y'all look at as meteorologists, do you look at if these conditions are such that in the past these have led to multiple tornadoes, or is there almost a formula to this?
Yeah, the conditions right now of a very strong jet stream that is dipping to the south through Louisiana and on up into Alabama. That jet stream is going to produce the lift that is necessary to produce severe thunderstorms. And the timing is such that the maximum lifting will occur this afternoon and this evening. And that will, of course, cause those individual thunderstorms over central Alabama this afternoon and early evening hours to become severe. And it will also cause thunderstorms along that front to become severe. So, yeah, all the ingredients are there for severe activity across Mississippi and Alabama and, of course, northwest Florida for this afternoon and particularly tonight.
And you say tonight, that timeline, give and take, 11 p.m. to about 1 a.m.?
Yeah, from 11 to perhaps 1 o'clock, that's when we expect the line to get into the Mobile area, and then it will move through the Florida Panhandle through the morning hours.
Should I take the lead on this, or you want to take the lead on telling people about having some kind of something to wake them up, whether it's a weather radio or an app on their phone or listening to this radio station? I mean, this is when people are asleep. This is the, when we're not paying attention.
That's right. And we tend to see down in this area of the country a lot of this activity that does occur after dark, whereas the maximum activity usually out in the Great Plains tends to occur in the heat of the afternoon. That's a danger at night because many people do not have televisions or radios on at the time.
Yeah, they got to do that. Dr. Bill, we appreciate the update, and we'll be checking back with you and getting the latest.
Okay, Sean.
All right, there he is, our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, with an update on this possibility of severe weather in our area and this chance of severe weather throughout the state of Alabama. Once again, I said it yesterday, I'll do it again. I was doing it with Dr. Bill. Go get up. They're not expensive. Weather alert radio, one of those that'll you put right there on the bedside table and will wake you up. Like an alarm clock, if you have a tornado warning, something to that effect is going to wake you up. Also, you can get apps on your phone if it's not already built in that'll send you those warnings. And of course, we run the warnings from the National Weather Service right here on FM Talk 106.5. So just keep your head on a swivel. Looks like an overnight deal for us tonight. We'll be right back. Cameron Smith up next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. St. Patrick's Day edition of the show. And I appreciate Dr. Bill checking in, and he'll continue to do that. Keep an eye on the severe weather for us. The timeline he's talking about right now, about 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. So obviously, further west you are, it's earlier. Remember that front's going to have that southwest to northeast angle on it. But the further south and west you are versus, east you are, that time, it could be earlier, it could be later, but 11 to 1 a.m. is what he's talking about for the front line coming through. You're getting these pop-up storms in front of it, this advance guard, mostly to our north, but still within the Lifson area. So keep your eyes on that as we make it through a bumpy day today, but we've been there before, and hopefully we come through this without any issues. All right, y'all say hello to my buddy Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Sean. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you very much. The celebration is rolling right here in the studio. We're excited about that. And it looks like they're rolling again up in Montgomery as it's return of the Gambling Act for Senator March. It's interesting, and now I'm hearing that, oh, this is the time it's going to get done. Maybe all the senators that he needed to, I don't know, make a deal with, change their mind. Maybe they're going to vote on this again.
Okay. I mean, and even if it gets through the Senate, you still have the House to contend with.
Well, that's the point, right? If it's that unstable, if this passes by, okay, help me with this, Cameron. If it passes by, like, a vote, you know, or two in the Senate to get the 21, or what is that? I mean, can you measure that against the House? So if it's that kind of just barely getting across the finish line in the Senate, it would worry me that you wouldn't get it done in the House.
Yeah, it would worry me, too. I mean, I don't know what the ultimate vote count would be, but the bottom line is, it already failed in the Senate, so tweaking it on the margins, and this is what I tell folks, the smart thing, and this is what most legislative leaders do when they're dealing with a controversial topic, is you round up your votes first so you know it's going to pass, and then you put it on the floor. You don't put it on the floor
right,
if you know it's going to fail. And so this is a weird situation now because it's like, well, we already had a Franken bill. But now we're going to bolt on some new pieces and take some, you know, pieces out. Oh, now it's great. And nobody buys that, right? Nobody, that's not a situation where you've already had a failed measure and then you're going to sort of try to jiggle it a little bit, revive it, and then run it back through. I think most folks say, hey, go back to the drawing board, get it right. There was something defective here. And I mean, how strange is it going to be if it barely passes the Senate? The House looks at it and it's like, this kind of smells awful, and it dies again. And so my point is, we've talked about this a lot. There's ways to get this right, to expand gaming in the state in a way that isn't a cronyist giveaway. But man, this is just a hard press. Like, we got to do it. We got to do it. No, you don't.
You know, and it's this, the discussion of the lottery only, these bills that have been brought forth that, well, they're just not going to get the support. And I know we've talked about this before, but I want people to realize this. When you realize the polling data shows that we're in the 70 to 80% range, and I, you know, some polls higher, some polls lower, for support for the lottery in Alabama. That would be, for any politician in my mind, Cameron, the low-hanging fruit. You would do this. You would get all the pats on the backs and the attaboys and attagirls out there for, oh, you're doing what the people want. That doesn't get traction beyond this. That is telling that the vote of we, the people of Alabama, is not the primary concern here.
No, of course not, Sean. I mean, this is a situation where, hey, there's some less popular things like the casino-style gambling, sports betting, that the folks who support those and want the home cooking for their brands to make sure they make the money, they need the lottery as a bootstrap to get their things through. And that's the reason to stand alone. Don't believe for a minute that a standalone lottery is impossible to pass. I certainly, first of all, it's not simple in that you still have to have a lottery commission and a bunch of other stuff you got to set up. I still don't like, you know, state-run lotteries. But you couldn't do that. It's not, there's a template for that that you could pass. And I do think there's a better chance of it passing. But then those casino operators and other folks say, whoops, wait a minute. The one thing that was more popular that could have helped us get what we want is out of the gates. And they're going to not like that.
All right. And speaking of revenue coming into the state, here, let me read what I typed here. And I was making notes for my conversation with Cameron. Hey, Cameron, Alabama's getting $4 billion. What should we spend it first on?
Well, if you're a Democrat in the state house, the answer is Medicaid expansion. Because once you get one-time money, that's the thing that they like to harp on all the time. My whole point here was allegedly coronavirus had an awful impact and did all kinds of bad things. And it certainly did from a health standpoint to many Alabamians and Americans. But, like, here's a money bomb from the federal government. And if the first instinct from any politician is, how do we spend this immediately versus, hey, how do we use this judiciously to address shortfalls and rainy days and things that happened as a result of COVID? You need to find new legislators if that's where you're starting.
Right. And we're going to get to that.
That's dangerous.
We're going to get to the question about our legislators. But, I mean, $4 billion, and there's Carvost. We've talked about it earlier in the week for municipalities, this, that, and the other. But let's say it was like 2.4 going to the general fund. I mean, that's almost the same as the general, or maybe $2 billion going to the general fund, and the general fund budget's $2.4 billion. I mean, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money out there. The Medicaid expansion, I want to go back to that for a second. I hear about this all the time, and this is interesting to talk about with you, because you and I come at things as fiscal conservatives, but also, let's say, a moral perspective, right? A Judeo-Christian or whatever perspective to help those in need. Wouldn't this be a chance to bring more people in and get them help for the healthcare, the working poor, those people? Why shouldn't we try to take this money now and get those people under the umbrella of Medicare?
Sure, and I think there's certainly a way to do that. And I like what you said as far as the working poor and helping folks out. I think that's certainly worth a conversation. But the other thing to remember is, even though it's a lot of money, it's one-time money. And so coming up with a plan to pay for this, and we need to focus heavily on health outcomes in Medicaid across the country. The issue needs to be, are we getting the results for the communities we're trying to serve? Are we finding ways that we're taking care of them? And there are a lot of creative ways to do this. Those are tough conversations. That's a lot of legislative work. And it's much easier to say, no, don't expand Medicaid, or just expand Medicaid. If you want to expand Medicaid and you want to address it, how you do it really, really matters. And I think that that's the unfortunate reality of this situation is, hey, it's great. There's money. If you want to do it, great. But find a way to, one, accommodate for the long-term spending implications for the state, but also find a way to make sure you're getting the results that you're paying for, rather than just saying, we have stuff, and then the people who actually need to be served don't really make the connection. That's where I sort of part company with the folks that just say, expand a thing. Well, you need to make it better and make sure that it's doing what you intended it to do.
Yeah, but the problem is, you got to set those parameters on the front, because, I mean, if you say, okay, well, here are the benchmarks it has to reach, you're not going to ever take it away once it's there. I mean, you're not going to say, oh, well, y'all didn't reach it, so we're going to take it away.
Right, and I think that's the issue needs to be, hey, in folks providing the care, are you providing the care in a way that is accounting for improved health outcomes? I mean, are we keeping people healthy and addressing that, or are we just sort of like slapping Band-Aids on acute medical conditions? I mean, this is a complicated area that nobody wants to admit it's complicated. It's more fun to just like talk in big platitudes. But there is a way here, and there's a smart way to do some of this stuff, because if you can address a lot of the healthcare needs, there's a real upside for the economy that a lot of times, particularly conservatives, don't want to admit. And creating those opportunities for lower income folks to have economic mobility and be able to do better because they're healthier, because they're, you know, we've talked about education and other things, that should be a goal of public policy, because then you create less of a situation where people depend on those supports.
What Cameron's talking about is politics with a point, but his article in AL.com, Politics Without a Point, we will talk about this when we come back. More with Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. A reminder, once again, you've got to our west, not in our area yet, but tornado watch is going on to our west. Those will probably be this afternoon coming into our area. And as Dr. Bill said, looking at the 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. as the time that the front is going to pass our area. We'll get an update on that coming up in just a second. Be right back. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Glad you're here.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, online, fmtalk1065.com, streaming all over the place. A lot of y'all do that streaming thing. We appreciate that as well. Continuing our conversation with Cameron Smith, AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. Speaking of AL.com, so I saw this today. What is this going on? You've got a town hall panel coming up, and this is... When and what's this all about?
on March 25th, 11 a.m., there's a town hall to just talk about what's happening with the legislature in Alabama, kind of going over a lot of the conversations you have had, you and I have had as we go along, whether it's lottery or the transgender bills or different things going on. Roy Johnson, Kyle Whitmire, and then on sort of the conservative side of things, Dana McCain and myself will be discussing this. And we'd really like folks to turn out and enjoy that conversation, be a part. And I understand that, you know, a lot of conservatives say, oh, AL.com, conservative, not sure. This is a great time to show up and sort of let your voice be heard in the chat and the conversation, and just to be a part, because I think that the way you change things is by showing up. And this is one of those situations where, you know, Dana and I are going to show up and say, hey, we understand there's some different perspectives on the Alabama legislature and politics in the state and on the federal level, and we want to talk about it. And so we'd love your audience to join us on March 25th, 11 a.m. online.
Yeah, okay. So if that was the question. So it's, what, Facebook and YouTube?
Yes, it is. I think it's a Facebook Live is the format. But on the thing that I tweeted out, you can get the details and come on, engage, be a part.
Okay, and we'll remind folks again about this, but you just go, because what you're asking here, let's just get down to brass tacks, is if the, you know, the folks that you're working with there, and there are lots of liberal voices at AL.com, they got to see that there's an audience here of conservatives in the state. I mean, I would say that it's obvious, but we need to make it obvious, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's point blank the issue is, I know a lot of your listeners, and they've reached out to me and said, well, you know, Cameron, we like your stuff, but AL.com is, you know, left of center. You know, they're bashing conservatives all the time. And a lot of that's true. But if you want to change it, they want to know that there's an audience and that the people in the state are going to show up and say, hey, we're here for conservative voices who are going to sort of raise some of the issues consistent with the conservative viewpoint of the state. And if the answer is, well, nobody actually wants to do that, then they say, well, they don't care and we'll just keep doing what we're doing. This is an opportunity to change that.
We'll keep reminding y'all, because this is important. Speaking of AL.com, your opinion piece, Politics Without a Point. I don't know. I went through about half a highlighter here. I used a green highlighter today, though, because of St. Patrick's Day. But half a highlighter and highlighting lines like watching House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy read Green Eggs and Ham in a protest of cancel culture perfectly captures our present political moment. Say what?
Yeah, I mean, it just, I literally saw that. Somebody sent it to me, and it was just Kevin McCarthy reading Green Eggs and Ham, and that was it, right? That was the tweet. And I think it was an attempt maybe to kind of like play on the vibe of cancel culture is bad and they canceled Dr. Seuss, but like that wasn't true. Green Eggs and Ham was never in jeopardy of being canceled. The publisher who represents the estate of Dr. Seuss said, hey, there's six of these books that aren't even that popular that we're not going to run anymore because there's some offensive stuff in them. But McCarthy didn't even read one of those because there is indeed some offensive stuff in there. And it was just bizarre, but it struck me as like, this is where we are. We are in a situation where one of the most powerful Republicans in the country right now, instead of focusing on the, you know, boondoggle that's happening with the stimulus bill and trying to come up with a proactive alternative agenda, it's like, I'm going to take a time out here and read Green Eggs and Ham for 4 minutes. And it just struck me as, man, we do not have a point. We do not know why we're doing what we're doing in politics. And that's a big issue.
Well, I think it is. But I think it's analogous to what we just talked about with at a state level. Right. And the discussion of Medicaid expansion. So these are things that we, you know, there's not a lot of discussion at the water cooler or on the back tailgate of the truck or, you know, at the house or whatever about these things. They're more complex. It's a lot easier to talk about, you know, we got to keep Sharia law from coming into Alabama or something like that. This is done because it works. And I realize it, too, because, I mean, you can get all lost in the weeds and the nuance of, or not nuance, but get in the weeds of the policy here. Or you can just say, I'm tired of people, you know, saying that everything about American society stinks.
Yeah, and I think that there's an important distinction here. And this is what my piece kind of got to, is that the political entertainment complex, which is actually what most people think about when they think of politics, it is like the World Wrestling Federation of governing. Like, it is as real as WWF in terms of the practical impact. I mean, what we're supposed to be outraged and upset, and we turn on the news and there's Tucker Carlson with his face all wrinkled up because, you know, man, Democrats did liberal things. And we're supposed to be like, dang, that's the worst. It's terrible that they did some liberals. Well, they're liberal. They don't even agree with us. I mean, what'd you think they were going to do? And it feels good, right? It's affirmation. Our viewpoints are good, and they want to destroy the world. And this is an industry, right? They know their point. The point isn't good governance. It's, I need your eyeballs to watch a thing, and we're going to make money off of it. That's what the political entertainment complex does. They have it on the left, on the right. Mostly that's what cable news is. And that I get that. We're going to talk in, like, big talking points and platitudes and stuff. And to, in some respects, talk radio, I mean, to keep people's attention, you have to speak in generalities. You and I can't get into the nitty-gritties of, you know, one legal section of Medicaid expansion. That's just hard to do live on the air. But what happens is we still need that. We still need people to do that and care about that. And that's what governing is. And it's slow and it's boring and it's hard. But that's a critical exercise. And so if we're constantly electing people who just want to entertain us as opposed to lead us, we got a huge problem.
Yeah, I think there's part of it is head-to-head, but it's also two-on-one. And I think the rise in conservative media and, you know, folks like me being on the air, folks like you being on the air, is in reaction to, let's say, mainstream media. So mainstream media, I would say they omit more than they commit, although I know there's a bunch of conservatives that disagree with me, but I think the challenge is the fact that they omit things when it serves their purposes, you know, and they don't put them in a story. But then the rise of conservative media came because of that. And then you had the rise of liberal media to fight back against the conservative media, even though the conservative media was just rising up because of mainstream news. And so it's a two-on-one. And people do feel that they need to make sure that somebody else hears their opinion, that they're not the only ones that are saying, this is poppycock, this is silly, this is ridiculous what this person, whoever it is saying.
Yes, and I actually agree with that. I think that that's really important. Because we do politics together, right? Politics isn't an individual engagement. It's sort of how we do things together. But what's happened is instead the whole role of journalism, like what our founders, the reason we have freedom of the press and things like that is because they saw the press as important to holding power accountable, right? So the focus was the media construct is holding that power accountable and, you know, creating pressure to do what's right. What's happened is the political left and right, progressives, conservatives, have basically started like hand slapping with each other and being like, you're bad. No, you're bad. No, you're bad. And instead of saying, well, what's good and why, you know, what's the proactive agenda that we can support that helps lead America to a better tomorrow? And it feels like we're doing something, but we're not. And I think that's the confusion that so many people have slipped into is they're entertained, affirmed.
Affirmed, yeah.
But they're not doing anything useful.
You point out, too, that in your article, a 2020 Pew Research poll conducted before the last presidential election found that 56% of President Joe Biden's supporters voted for him because he's not Trump. And then you pointed out, too, that in the prior election, Trump was not Hillary Clinton. There were a lot of votes that went for Trump because of the distastefulness of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, and not the other guy is not a governing philosophy.
No.
And that's the kind of thing that we've fallen into is like, man, well, at least this one's not that one. I mean, how sad is that, right? That is the excitement that we have. And I think we need to move away from the cult of personality politics and say, hey, look, we're going to have ideas to solve problems. We're going to focus on those. And I'm not talking about super detailed, but my question to each one of your listeners is, what do you want? What is the point? What's the goal? Like what, when you think of government and you think of your elected officials, what would make you happy for them to come back and say, you know, here's what I'm working on. Here's the problem. What is that problem you want them to solve? And if you just say something like stop socialism or stop the Democrats or stop something vague, we've got a problem because you don't know really what you want. And so they can get away with whatever. And so I think that's the important thing, is just for normal Americans to say, okay, well, what do I really expect from government? What's the thing that I want that is how I'm looking at candidates, how I'm looking at what they do? Because if the answer is, well, they make me feel good because they yell real loud, but over a decade they only pass one post office naming. Well, then, man, that's a really strange standard for our politics.
You know what people are going to say right now, and I'll say it along with them. You know what I want from government? I want less of it. I want less government. And you you quoted in the story, a quote, I've heard part of this from the venerated Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, over the years, but I didn't get the full context. Talk about this. You said the government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, quote.
Yeah, and everybody hears that, and they're like, well, government's the problem. Well, the truth is that Reagan was actually talking about, you know, an economic collapse and in a specific context. And then he followed that quote on to say, we need to make government work. And so, you know, Reagan was not this type of person that said, well, no government, all government is bad. And I think that's a terrible governing philosophy as well. And I've come from conservative land, and we've had that for a long time. But the way to shrink government, if that's what you want to do, if that's your policy objective, you do that through governing. And you can't shrink government by just kind of ignoring government, because then people who want to expand it just keep going. And I've said this on your show, I've said this over and over again, that going to Washington and saying we're just going to oppose the other side, it's like trying to win a NASCAR race with just brakes. It does not work. But yet so many conservatives think that's a viable option. It's not.
But the point people are going to say is you're asking conservatives or Republicans to take off their armor when the Democrats don't, because the Democrats are going to run on the same thing. I mean, heck, look what they just did to former President Trump. It wasn't about policy. Heck, there were so many policies that President Trump had that should have lined up with Democrats up there, but because it was a assassination of that cult of personality, they just ran against the person. He's bad. Yeah, all conservative. If you believe anything that President Trump said, then you're a racist, right? You're racist. You're a homophobe. You hate babies. You hate puppies.
Sure. And I mean, if you're a puppy punter or you eat babies, that's bad and you shouldn't do that. But I get that. But I use President Trump as a great example of this. He actually had a number of really important policy successes that had broad appeal across the country. If he makes his campaign about that and saying, hey, we've delivered for you, versus making it about himself, which he is categorically unable to do, then he wins that election. And I genuinely believe that. And so, yeah, they're always going to come after your character. I mean, this is politics. It's ugly. We know that. But the idea of, hey, we start solving some problems for people, we start helping them out and doing good things and pointing to that, guess what? They reward that. I refuse to believe this notion of all that matters is, you know, ego. I mean, that is just a awful, awful future for us. And I do think that there's a lot of room for us to kind of just be thinking about this stuff. We don't have to be mad about it. And I think, truthfully, particularly for conservatives, if you're mad and angry, you're off your game. If you're so frustrated to the point where you're immobile, you don't want to participate, don't want to be a part, well, guess what? There's people that don't share your viewpoints who are perfectly happy for you to be that way.
All right, before we wrap up here, just a not that we won't talk about this a whole bunch over the next year and a half or so, but people who want to go to Washington. You had, of course, the announcement, the early announcement for the senatorial from Linda Blanchard. She had the, the fundraiser. I don't know if that's an endorsement by former President Trump, but now we're all waiting within days here for announcement from Congressman Mo Brooks, if he is in. And then I got a question about Katie Britt. Is what about her? What about Jeff Coleman? How do you see this lining up?
So, ultimately, the shakeout, I think, is probably going to be between what I call a more traditional Republican and a populist Republican. And the populist being more, so we'll call it the Trumpy Republican. Blanchard has said, I'm in it to win it. I've got resources. I'm jumping in. I don't think the Trump sort of elbow rubbing was an endorsement, but it certainly didn't hurt her.
Right.
I think Mo Brooks gets in. He's also in that Trump populist vein. That's his MO, literally. and I think that the candidates that are worth watching, you've got John Merrill. I like him. I think he's done a good job as Secretary of State. I think what lane he fits in is really interesting to me, because I think if you got Blanchard with resources and Brooks with his sort of pro-Trump populism, I don't know how Merrill runs in that lane. On the other side, you've got Katie Britt, I think, with what we call a traditional Republican is kind of where I would put her. Potentially Gary Palmer, but I think that's the field right now, and people are trying to fill out where they fit. And for Jeff Coleman's, other folks, if you lose a congressional race and then think you're going to win a statewide Senate race, you're not. I mean, that's just not a good formula to lose and immediately come back and say, well, the real issue was that I just didn't run in an arena larger than the one where people are most likely to know who I am. It's certainly something you can do. I just don't think it'll be successful.
That's called putting the hay down there where the horses can get after it. CameronSmithAL.com, Triptych Foundation. And a reminder, once again, this town hall event is coming up when?
March 25th, 11 a.m. It's going to be a Facebook Live and other things. You can check my Twitter feed for that, at DCameronSmith. And come check us out at the Triptych Foundation, www.triptychfoundation.org.
Always a pleasure, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, John.
Coming right back, more Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Next hour, Mobile County Commissioner District 3, Randall DeWitt, joins us. Also, Dale Leach from Landyap. Lots to do. Glad you are here.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:55, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Also good to talk to my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM. Always new inventory on the lot. Hey, Larry.
Good afternoon. How are you, Sean?
I'm good, and I'm even better here in some of the vehicles. You gave me a little preview of what's brand new at the lot.
Absolutely. We just got in a 2017 Hyundai Elantra. That's a little four-door sedan, just like brand new, with only 19,000 miles. It's automatic, fully loaded. Then we got in what's really hard to find, a 2011 Chevrolet Avalanche LT package with lots of extras, and it's only got 70,000 miles. And then the real hard to find, we got a 2013 Nissan Frontier extended cab automatic with 45,000 miles.
Ooh, okay. A lot of people's attention has been raised with those vehicles. Let's talk about financing. How's it looking?
Finance is great. The credit unions are real aggressive. And like I said, we've signed up with some major lenders over the last couple months, and they're really digging deep for us. So they got great rates and great terms, and they spread out all across the Southeast.
All right. People want to come out and check out the vehicles, talk financing. How do they find you?
Come see us, Highway 90 at Plantation Road, online at lcmmotorcars.com. Please like us on Facebook and just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. All right, a bunch of texts here. I may be able to get to some of these, but I also want to get to the question I asked over on the Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5 on Twitter. I asked this before the show started this morning. Just your favorite on the St. Patrick's Day, the best Irish-themed or set movie. Okay, so kind of leaving it open there. Let me exclude my friend and partner, Dalton Norwig, who suggested Leprechaun 4, Leprechauns in Space. Classic, but we got Gangs of New York, Quiet Man, Waking Ned Divine. This one, Kill the Irishman, that was sent to me. I had never seen that one. I put that on my to-watch list here. Jeff Force says Rudy. I get it. I get you. Let's see. Which one? Luck of the Irish. I've not seen that one either. My buddy Mike Callahan. So happy St. Patrick's Day to you. The Boondock Saints. Let's see here. A lot of Rudy's. Some other Leprechaun 4s. Gangs of New York on there. Let's see, Far and Away, Darby O'Gill and the Little People. Now we're talking. That's old school. Which one here? So more Darby O'Gill and the Little People. So these are a couple, Quiet Man in there on the list. So yeah. So if you're over on Twitter at FM Talk 106.5, just kind of fun thing as people maybe get home, we'll come in and get settled earlier today with all the unsettled weather that may be heading our way. Fire up the old radio with pictures thing and watch a movie tonight. You choose. It's just some of these lists here of Irish set or themed movies. Pretty good stuff. Keep it up. Or you can do it on the text line too. It's 343-0106, 343-0106. Mobile County Commissioner District 3, Randall DeWitt, joins us next.
Dix River Shooting Center is now accepting new memberships for 2021.